session number 20466, reel 2.
Just reel 2.
We had falls of the side, we had derailments, we had occasional signs of smoke and heatings, we had runaways, several things, and you really didn't know enough about the mining industry to realise why it was happening or what caused it to happen. And it's only with experience that you realise that it was frightening and puzzling as well. And when you didn't know what was causing it, it was concerning, yes.
What are runaways?
Well, as I said before, we would clip sets of tubs together onto the ropes. Sometimes the clips failed, or they slipped, or even the rope broke. There was many, I can remember several occasions when the rope broke. And of course all the sets would run away then, and you end up with a smash, and there would be tubs of coal all cocked over the place, and sometimes roof supports knocked out, and it was a puzzling job at times, yeah. It was thinking back.
What were relations like between colliers and management in your pit?
I think they were very good. In those days, of course, the colliery manager was like the village squire. He was a man very much respected. He was usually chairman of the tennis club, and he was in everything and everything. And one thing, you didn't see a lot of him underground. So the underground side of the industry was run by the undermanager, and he was quite a forceful character, but a fair man, and I thought the relationships were always pretty good. In fact, later on in life, as I gained my experience, he became a mentor to me, and I have a lot to thank the undermanager for at Annesley in those days.
Did you find colliers in any way a different breed from people you'd known down south?
Oh, yes. I mean, they call them rough diamonds. I mean, when you... the fact that you're working in hot, dirty, damp conditions, usually stripped to the waist, sometimes with nothing on at all. There's no inhibitions. There's no toilets underground. There weren't in those days. I mean, it was... certainly people were uninhibited, and there were very close associations were formed, and that carried on out of the pit as well after the day's work. I mean, because they were mining villages, they were very close-knit villages. They had excellent cricket teams, they had excellent football teams, and they flew pigeons and did all the things that colliers are famous for doing, and there was a good atmosphere.
What was their attitude towards you as a southerner?
I got ribbed because I'd got a southern accent, I think, which they probably notice I've lost now, but in those days I was a broad Hampshire lad, probably as green as grass as well, so I got ribbed, and but it was all taken to a good part, and you learn to give as good as you get, I think. And we got on well.
Did you ever get bad quarrels between colliers?
I can't remember any bad quarrels where it came to blows. No, I can't. I can't remember anything that, you know, where there would be any antagonism.
What would you take down the pit with you each day in the way of provision?
Well, in those days, every collier had a snap tin and a Dudley. Now, a Dudley is a round bottle, tin bottle, which holds about 5 pints of water. And the sandwiches in the box was either jam or dripping or lard or whatever the good lady felt she could put up for us, but we stopped for a quarter of an hour every shift for our sandwiches, and our drink, and the shifts were in those days 8-hour shifts, and the only break you got was your snap time, because the haulage used to stop, so everybody stopped at the same time, but just for the quarter of an hour, which was the snap time, as we called it.
Do you remember what wages were like as a Bevin boy?
Yes, I was on. I was daily paid on the haulage at 12 shillings a shift. 12 shillings a shift.
How did you feel about that amount?
Well, it's strange, isn't it? Because, I mean, I thought, what did that equate to? £3 a week? £3 and something? And, of course, we worked Saturday mornings in those days as well. And I paid my landlady 30 shillings a week for my board and lodgings. And I'd got 30 bob left for myself. And I seemed to get through. I don't know how I did. But I seemed to manage it okay. And there was never any money spare. We didn't save any money, but at least we enjoyed ourselves. I mean, I think a pint of beer was about 8p. So it was all relative, wasn't it? I know, I can remember to get home from Nottingham Victoria Station to Winchester, it was 30 shillings return on the train. And that was a week's pocket money. I had to save up to go home to Winchester. It was 30 shillings. I always remember that.
Do you feel discontented at all as a Bevin boy?
I think it was all a big experience. I suppose I regretted not doing my service to go into the forces. I did regret that, and but it was all a big experience. And I suppose the only regret that I had was that of that, not feeling that I'd served my country as a sailor or a fleet air man. But in retrospect, of course, I've managed to get a life out of it.
Were there any creatures down the pier?
A lot of mice. You'd got to make sure when you hung your snap bag up that it was in a safe place, otherwise you'd find it had been nibbled and chewed. Of course, that was associated with the ponies, because we always took chop, hay, straw for the ponies, so that they could have their snap, and where they gathered, there was always mice, and never saw any rats, but there was certainly a lot of mice in those days.
Was it cool or hot down there?
If you worked on the haulage, you could be in quite a cold, drafty situation, but as far as you got farther in by to the coal faces, it got very warm.
Did the severe winter of 47 make any difference to you?
It did, in as much as we couldn't get to work on several occasions. The Annesley is in a cutting in the railway, and it got snowed in several days, and they couldn't get any couldn't get wagons down to the yard. And in fact, the buses, we couldn't get to work on the buses. And we got what was called a Bevin in those days, which was a day's wage in lieu, because as long as we let them know we'd made an effort to get to work and failed, we got what was called a Bevin. I can't quite remember what it was. Enough to tide us over. Because Bevin, of course, was the Minister of Fuel and Power.
Do you remember the nationalisation of the pits?
Oh, yes.
And whether that had any impact?
I can remember the day, the first day of nationalisation. We had a notice, at the top of the pit yard, that this colliery is now managed for and behalf of the, I forget the exact wording, for and behalf of the people by the National Coal Board. And of course, Annesley Colliery was given some pithead baths. In my early days there, we had no baths. We travelled backwards and forwards to our lodgings in our pit clothes, which caused a bit of disturbance on the buses, especially on a Saturday when the ladies were going shopping. But on nationalisation, we got pithead baths. That was quite an experience.
What were they like?
They were very good. I mean, Annesley was one of the later ones to have baths, so we had, I suppose, what was the best. We went into the baths, and there was double tiers of lockers. One where you could on one side of the bath, you put your clean clothes in. Then you travelled up through the showers to the other set of lockers, the other side, where your dirty clothes was. So never the twain met. And when you came out of the pit in your dirty clothes, you put them in your dirty locker. You went through the bathhouse and got your bath and put your clean clothes on the other side and into the canteen. So it made a big difference to us. That did. It made a lot of difference.
How had you bathed before then?
Went home to bath in the lodgings. That was one of the problems we had getting lodgings in Holtnell, because there was no pithead baths and people didn't want your dirty colliers. But I was fortunate enough that my landlady accepted us. Her husband had been a miner, and we had hot baths every day, all for 30 bob a week.
Did you have a bathroom, or was it?
Oh yes, she had a bathroom. Yes, she had a bathroom.
Were trade union affairs or politics ever discussed amongst colliers?
We all joined, as far as I can remember, we all joined the National Union of Mine Workers. And funnily enough, our secretary at Annesley was Harold Larwood's brother, Bob Larwood, you know, the cricketer, because Annesley was quite it was cricket orientated, the whole colliery was, and Bob Larwood was quite a character, and we all joined the NUM in those days. We weren't politically motivated at all. It was just a question of being a part of the team, I think.
What effect did NUM have?
In those days, I don't recollect it having any effect at all on us as boys. Of course, after nationalisation, the daily pay came in, you know, the agreement for daily pay, which made a big difference to everybody. And so, I mean, that was all something that, as far as we were concerned as boys and workmen, although it happened, we weren't politically motivated at all. We didn't strike or anything like that. I don't remember being on strike at all until later on when I was in management.
What was the attitude towards having daily pay instead of piecework?
I think most people accepted it pretty well. It took a bit of getting used to, because people had been used to having a carrot dangled in front of them as an incentive. And they thought that there was a bit of an attitude developed for a short while that the fact that they were on a day wage meant that they could sort of take things a bit more casually. But there was a bit more pressure from management to make sure that attitude didn't get old. I mean, a task was a task was a task. And for a short while, it created a bit of bother, but nothing really serious. It was just a little bit of animosity grew in that. The fact that here we were now getting a day wage, and it didn't matter whether we fulfilled our obligations or not. And that went on for a very short while, really, and then people soon got used to it.
And so you stayed in Nottinghamshire Coalfield after you'd made a career of it?
Oh, yes, yes.
Always in Nottinghamshire?
Always in Nottinghamshire, yes. Fortunate in that respect, because Nottinghamshire had always been to the forefront of the mining industry. I think mainly because Nottinghamshire miners readily accepted change better than some. And we took to mechanisation and all the improvements that came along with it pretty well. And of course, in some respects, the conditions were slightly easier than some of the areas, and so the coal board sought to make bigger investments in the Nottinghamshire pits, and so we were always pretty well to the forefront of mechanisation and improvements. So I mean, there was an incentive. A lot of people wanted to come to Nottinghamshire, so I certainly didn't want to go out of it.
Why do you think Nottinghamshire miners were more adaptable to change?
I think it's just an attitude of mind. I don't quite know why, because I didn't experience other places. Only that you know what I've heard, but I think really they tended to be a little bit. I don't think I ought to say a little bit more greedy, but a lot very anxious to see what's in the what's the best. We'll have the best if it's there to be got. They weren't particularly. I don't think they were greedy men. I think they always liked the best. They liked the best. They liked to have a new motor car, and they liked to have three-piece suites and fitted carpets, and they always wanted the best. So they were prepared to work for it, and there was certainly a better attitude in Notts than there was in a lot of places. So as I say, that was the reason why the coal board, in my opinion, certainly invested a lot of money in the Nottinghamshire pits.
Which pits did you eventually manage?
My first appointment was an under manager at Bentinck Colliery, which is in South Notts, and I spent 5 years there, and then I went from there to Silver Hill Colliery as deputy manager. From Silver Hill Colliery to Tevershill Colliery as a manager, from Tevershill Colliery to Sutton Colliery as manager, and then from Sutton Colliery to Harworth as general manager, which is this one up the way here. And I spent the last 13 years of my life at Harworth Colliery, which is the most northerly one in the Nottinghamshire coalfield. I'm still working.
When did you eventually finish?
I finished when I was 60, in 1986, after 22 years as a colliery manager.
What were the main problems of being colliery manager in the Notts Coalfield?
Well, each colliery presents its own problems. I mean, Silver Hill Colliery was steep seams. The seams are inclined fairly steeply, so you've got problems with gradients and ventilation, things like that. Tevershill Colliery was quite easy. It was a little shallow. I went there because I was sent there for only a short while, a year. One of the managers took ill, he had a heart attack, and there was a rapid move round, and I was sent there as sort of night watchman. That was fairly easy. And then Sutton Colliery, which was more difficult, was subjected to a lot of interaction and ground movement. So each place has got its own problems, and this is one of the things that you learn as you go along. Harworth Colliery, this big one up here, was very hot and gassy, and very difficult. But fortunately, because we managed to get it turned round, we made some improvements up here, and the coal board decided to drive two drifts down to a new seam, which we did in the 80s, and it turned it round into quite a prosperous money-spinning place, and is now, of course, still working under the control of RJB Mining, their headquarters. So each pit has got its own particular problems, if you like. Quite a challenge.
You said earlier that you didn't experience industrial disputes early on, but that they came later.
Oh yes, in 1982, the first one, I believe. 82, I think, was the first one, and then 84 was the whole year. But of course, Nottinghamshire miners decided to work, and Harworth Quarry is on the Yorkshire border. In fact, we were mining coal under Yorkshire, although the shafts themselves were in Notts. We were working under Yorkshire because it's the county boundary runs through the village. So we were on the front line of picketing. I mean, it was fairly horrendous. We worked basic 5-day week. some of the men went out on strike, but we were picketed incessantly, as many as 6,000 one day. We had helicopters and police and Black Marias pretty horrendous. So we did experience that time.
Was work stopped at that pit because of picketing?
Was work stopped? We had a time when it stopped, and of course, although Notts miners worked, they didn't do any overtime. A lot of the maintenance management had to do with themselves, and we had a pretty rough time for a year.
Was there much difference between 82 strike and 84 strike?
82 strike, I was working at Sutton Colliery then, which is down in the county, and you know, farther nearer to Nottingham, away from the Yorkshire border. It was an inconvenience. We didn't work. I mean, there was problems, and we caused problems for management. But there wasn't the antagonism that we had in the 84 strike. I think we suffered mainly up here because of the locality being close to the Yorkshire.
But what about strikes in the early 70s?
We had very little. We had overtime bans, but we didn't have any strikes as much. We had bans on overtime, but we didn't really have any strikes that affected output to that extent. Not in Nottinghamshire.
So in the 80s strikes, it was mainly Yorkshire miners picketing, was it?
Yes, yes, yes.
What did the Notts miners think of the Yorkshire miners?
Well, of course, we had the breakaway of the unions. You know, we had the breakaway to the UDM. And that itself, I mean, even at Harworth, there was a few stuck with the NUM, and that caused troubles when they got back to work again. But basically, it turned into a strong UDM colliery, and still is. And so it was the breakaway of the unions that split the two camps more as much as anything. But there, I suppose even today in the village of Harworth, there's still families who are a little bit against one another because of the fact that they changed UDM, NUM and UDM.
Who were the people who stuck with the NUM? Were they local Notts people or were they incomers?
No, they were local Nottinghamshire people who decided that... I mean, it all started over the fact that they weren't allowed a ballot. Can you remember? I mean, if they'd have been allowed a ballot, probably wouldn't have had half the troubles that we had. But as a result of that, some of them decided that we'll stop with the NUM. It was just a matter of a personal opinion, I believe. Some of them were family histories. I mean, some of them, the fathers had been NUM members and officials, and it was a decision that they made themselves and stopped with the UDM. With the NUM, rather.
How do you feel now about having chosen to work in mining industry as a career?
Well, I think I made the right decision. I made the only decision at the time, and I think I made the right decision. there was a lot of hard work. We had some setbacks. We had a few bad years when things didn't go very well for us. But all in all, I mean, I enjoyed becoming a mining engineer. I enjoyed my experiences. I became a member of the Institute of Mining Engineers and a fellow of the Institute, and I enjoyed my associations with those people. And obviously, I finished at 60, which I'd sort of planned to do a long while ago, and my wife and I have had a very happy retirement.
What were the bad years?
The bad years were due mainly because of the difficulties we had in early days of mechanisation, trying to mechanise conditions that weren't able to be mechanised, if you like, and I would spend hours and hours and hours underground and hardly see daylight some weeks, and you know, it was a real struggle to try and achieve results from which we were expected to do, out of conditions that just weren't there to be worked.
Which years were those?
I think in probably late 60s, early 70s. I mean, we tried also. I mean, it was very interesting. I mean, early days of mechanisation, and we did all sorts of things. And it was a gradual learning curve. And now, of course, today it's a different ball game altogether.
In what way?
Well, I remember in my early days, we worked between 22 and 24 men on a coal face. Nowadays, I think it's 6 at the most. It's incredible. And where we were sort of cyclic mining, nowadays it's continuous. And some of the results, I mean, there are faces now are turning as much in a year that some pits did in a sort of lifetime. It was. Talking about million-ton faces.
Why was it that in the early days there were few, yet later there were a lot of strikes?
I think the strikes came about mainly, the serious strikes came about when they started about pit closures. I mean, when people could see that they'd got a job for life, as long as we had our annual rises through negotiations with the NUM and the board, usually. I mean, what was his name? In the 70s.
Are you thinking of trade union or management?
No, the government man that was put in charge of, what was his
Robins?
Name?
Robins?
No, not Robins. He was a politician who arbitrated and gave us all more than we'd had a strike, and they went to arbitration, and I forgot his name there.
He gave
us more than what we expected, and everybody was quite happy. And it wasn't until the pit closure story came about that we had the serious strikes. Unfortunately, while I'm not a Scargill admirer, I mean, Scargill certainly knew about a lot more about pit closures than we did as management, and the workforce used to talk to me about pit closures, and I used to say, take no notice of him, he's not right. But in fact, he turned out to be right, and the only thing he did wrong, he didn't conduct himself properly, did he?